This is Batman. Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. It's what it does, because I'm Batman.
Welcome to episode 50, part 1 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Joined in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. It's finally here. Episode 50 is ready to go. We have the most guests ever in the history of Comic Timing on this episode. So I hope you guys can take it. Plus, there's an extra 50 minutes at the end, and it's kind of sick. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to a whopper. It is episode 50 of Comic Timing. This is part one, as this one's definitely going to be split up into two parts, as we have the most guests on this show we have ever had, as we're splitting this up into segments here. And to start things off, well, first let me introduce the regular, the co-host, Brent Cassino. What's up, Brent?
And I just wanted to take the time to point out that the co-host, not co-host, canceled each other out, leaving only the co-host.
You're damn right.
Just for this episode.
You are indeed the co-host for this, as you're the running guest through all these calls.
Apparently someone keeps giving you shit on Facebook about it, so I don't know.
Yeah,
I know.
I'm going to have to figure that out. But anyway, yeah, what's going on, Brett?
Nothing much.
And we're also joined for the first time since episode 3. The gang is back together. Let me introduce the guy on the phone first. He is currently the host of Marvel Noise, his own solo podcast, and he is still affectionately known as the Man of 1,000 Podcasts. He is David Price.
Hello, folks.
Long time no see, buddy. How's it been?
It's been great. I want to know if Brent's days are numbered now that he's actually officially known as a co-host.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm start dropping like a fly, too, now.
Yeah, right. Next thing I know, it'll just be me in a corner standing with a box.
Standing out on the side streets of Brooklyn with a microphone.
Yeah, right. Yeah, whatever you do, avoid the red shirts at all costs. The other guy on the phone...
I was wearing a red shirt yesterday.
Well, I'm glad you're not wearing one today, man, because or else you'd be screwed. An anvil would fall from the sky, and you'd just be doomed. We're joined also by the guy who, well, pretty much got this whole thing started back in the day. He's the guy who came to me and said, hey, let's do a podcast. I'm like, okay, sure, whatever. And he is back for the first time since episode 3, Toby Cook. What's up, Toby?
Hey, how's it going? Oh, it's been quite a week, so busy with school and stuff, so...
It's been about quite a couple months for you, right?
Oh, yeah, you know, with relocation back in April, starting school, and that's pretty much it right now,
Well, it's definitely good to hear your voice back on the show, man.
Yeah, well, it's good to be back. Couldn't let episode 50 pass by without at least wanting to be a part of it.
Definitely, yeah. So. And we have a large amount of people on this episode. Just to run it through here before we actually get into the meat of it here, along with the guys who are on this call, the next call we're going to have on the Raging Bullets crew, Sean and Jim, along with Freddie E. Williams. And that one, I'm trying for 40-minute segments here. There's no way in hell that's just going to be 40 minutes, I have a feeling, because limiting Sean and Jim to 40 minutes is like telling a dog you can't pee on the fire hydrant.
I was going to say, anybody who's listened to Raging Bullets knows that you can't limit those guys to 40 minutes.
Right.
There's
right.
Just no
I
way.
Told Sean he should edit while he's talking to us. That way he can get in the occasional uh-huh, and then that way Jim will talk more and we'll keep in 40 minutes.
Oh, boy. Call number 3 is going to be David D. And joining us for the first time, Wood from the CGS forums. And call number 4, we'll have the regular crew of Raph, Brent, and myself, and obviously Brent is the stalwart, and myself on all the calls. But we're going to be talking comic book universes on this episode, and I'm just going to get right into the meat of it. And I figure I'll ask David first, since his show is on the Comic Book Noise Network is Marvel Noise. So, David, what is it that attracted you to the universe known affectionately as Marvel?
Oh man, it kind of has to start with the newspaper with the Amazing Spider-Man strip. I had family in New York. I lived in New York for a few years, and we moved around a lot and came back to New York. But it was kind of neat having a universe, following a comic book universe that pretty much shares the same space as I do. I mean, there's no, and it's as great as they are, but there's no Coast City, there's no Star City, there's no Gotham. It's just, this is New York.
Right.
That's where everything is. You might, you know, I mean, I wouldn't go into the city looking to think I could see Spider-Man swinging across buildings, but these were real places. It was real locations.
Hey, well, today there was a crane that crashed into a building that actually reminded me a lot of the scene from Spider-Man 3.
Oh, okay.
So you never know what's going to happen in New York, man. For all we know, he could be swinging around
given.
Somewhere. Right. Toby, you're more of a DC guy from what I remember, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And what drew you to DC?
Well, that was actually – DC was really the first comics that I ever read. I mean, the first comic that I can actually remember was an issue of Adventure Comics, one of the big dollar size 100 pages, mm-hmm. with the JLA or the JSA Roundtable on the cover. From there, you know, it kind of just got me hooked. It's like David said, DC Universe has New York, but we've also got Gotham City. You know, we've got Star City. We've got Metropolis. I mean – the DC Universe was the first comic book universe.
Yeah.
You
know? Another thing that I think, because Ian, you and I live in New York, so I mean, it could mean a lot to us for Marvel as Marvel fans, but if you have some dude living in Iowa or Ohio or Colorado, you know, what the hell does he care about where the Avengers live or what happens in Salem Center? So, I mean, the fact that, you know, you could have a Keystone City, these are already fantastical stories, so who cares where they're located?
That's a good point. With all the different comic book companies out there, there's a universe out there for everybody, really. You know, look at CrossGen as a good example. You know, how quickly people got attached to that universe.
Yeah.
Valiant, same thing.
Oh,
you know?
Definitely. Yeah.
There's still people today that still talk about Valiant. And I mean, it just shows... You know, the legacy of the not only the universe itself, but the characters that inhabit that universe that draws people.
Well, Brent, actually, this would be a good time to ask you. Obviously, since you're a guy from Florida, does it detract at all from Marvel Comics from you that the fact that most of their guys are based in New York? Because I know that you're mostly a DC fan. Was it just the fact that the DC Universe is more inviting to you that draws you to DC?
Yeah, I think it's the same thing as Toby. Is I started reading DC Comics first more than, you know, if I was going to pick a comic, it was going to be Batman more than Spider-Man. But, I do think that the only being in New York kind of detracts from Marvel a little bit. I mean, rarely ever is there a comic that kind of ventures outside of it. I think maybe today Ghost Rider and Blade, which is now canceled, right, are the only comics that take place outside of New York. I could be wrong.
Other than the order.
Is Thunderbolts in New York?
No, Thunderbolts is in they're in what, Cheyenne Mountain, I guess, technically. Because I mean,
yeah, Wyoming.
Yeah.
Either Wyoming or Colorado.
Yeah, and again, I totally love that image of the Thunderbolts, you know, leaving Stargate SG-1 headquarters and heading out for their missions. It's like, I mean, my God, could you pick a better place to have them located?
It should be pointed out, I think, also that since Brent and Toby, their first comic books were pretty much DC comics. I think that also plays a factor in things. The first comic book I picked up off a spinning rack at a newsstand was the second issue of the Marvel Comics adaptation of Blade Runner.
Okay.
And I remember seeing the in-house ads and flipping through the other comics on the rack. I was drawn to Marvel more than anybody. I mean, I recognized Batman. I knew who Superman was. I knew who the DC characters were, but it was more of a bonding, I think, with the Marvel characters, whether it was the way it was written. You know, Superman... You know, when you're 10 years old, you're not looking at it and going, oh, my God, Superman's been around for, like, already 40 years. I mean, how am I supposed to catch up or anything? But the characters in a Marvel comic were just, they were written differently. And I don't want to say they were more believable, but they were just, I kind of associated more with them.
Yeah, well, my first comic book came from Uncanny X-Men 300. So that drove me to Marvel Comics first, and it took me a little longer to get into DC because of that.
Well, you're making me feel old here, Ian.
I always do, man. I always do.
I was going to say, my first comic that I actually bought was, I believe it was JLA 199. It was the one that had the New Teen Titans 16-page pullout.
Yeah, it was either like 199 or 198 or something, yeah.
Yeah, so this was, you know, back in like, what was that, 1980? That was 1980, I think.
Yeah, around then.
Yeah, so, you know, 27 years later, and I still, you know, will pick up a DC comic before I'll pick up a Marvel comic. And it's just, that's what I was exposed to first, so that's naturally where I'm going to gravitate.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not selling Marvel short, because books like Captain America, Daredevil... And, you know, all of the stuff that they're putting out now, they're putting out some really good books. but it's just the first thing I'm going to look at when I go into a comic store is I'm going to look at the DC stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just naturally, you know, those characters, especially, you know, like Green Lantern is my favorite. That's going to be the first one that I'm going to look for.
Yep. No, nothing wrong with
especially
that.
Especially now.
Yeah, yeah. Kyle Rayner is definitely a wonderful character. Yeah.
No, let's not get carried away. That's just no.
Yeah. Let's
have to go
with,
in rooms by bringing
up
Kyle.
Kyle Jordan, and then we'll talk.
Thank
about
you very much.
Thank you.
Oh
boy.
I'm with you on Kyle.
Some things never.
I got
changed.
Your back, Ian.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm here for.
Kyle makes a great villain. I love Parallax. You're right. No, Kyle's great.
I knew Kyle was kind of chicken. He looks good in yellow now.
That was in one issue.
Oh boy. And just like that, it's like old times all over again.
There you go. Yeah.
Brent, going with the idea that that Toby brought up, your first comic book was a DC comic book, right?
I guess so. Okay. As far back as I remember, anyway.
All right, cool. And I mean, do you feel that that's one of the reasons why you got driven to DC first? Obviously, reading it first leads you into the universe.
Well, I was a fan of Batman first, and then picked up the Batman comics, which leads to more Batman comics, which leads to whatever's advertised inside the Batman comics. So I'll have to say yes. I think you're definitely more inclined to whatever comic book universe you pick up first.
Agreed.
Of the big two.
Definitely, yeah. Well, actually, this is a good point to bring this up. I guess, what was your second universe you got into after DC? Did you go to Marvel, or did you go to one of the independents?
I went to Marvel. I mean, because right around that time was when Empire Strikes Back was coming out, and you know, I saw the Marvel adaptation of that.
Ah, okay.
And that also was around the time that I saw the Kiss comic adaptations. And since my friends had just introduced me to, you know, all the Kiss solo stuff, that was a big drawing point. And the fact that Marvel around that time was doing all those Treasury editions, I think G.I. Joe came out not too long after that. And, you know, I had a huge G.I. Joe obsession when I was a kid. So things like that. You know, Marvel was always good at doing the licensed books. And I think that's kind of where I started learning that there was more than DC out there. Then I started gravitating towards that. At the same time, I was also reading a lot of Charlton horror stuff. Not so much their superhero stuff, because around that time, they kind of tapered off from that. I think David and I are about the same age, if I'm right. Right, David?
Yeah.
So around, you know, when we were kids, there really wasn't much other than Marvel and DC.
Because the direct market really wasn't a factor in it yet.
Yeah.
There at that point, there was no direct market, really.
Right.
I mean, because really the only thing I can remember is, you know, going to the local grocery store, which at that point, you know, spinner racks were still a huge deal. Up until Dazzler number one was the first direct market comic. And up until then, other than spinner racks, guys like David and I didn't really have much options. I mean, you were lucky if you could find anything other than Marvel or DC. That's what sold on the racks.
That's great. Dazzler number one will always be remembered for something.
Yeah. See, what's weird, though, is I don't remember Dazzler number one being the first. I remember Moon Knight. The Danny Fingeroth Moon Knight being the first direct market comic that I ever saw.
Okay. Is it just the fact that had perhaps maybe a bigger distribution than Dazzler did? Maybe that's why?
I don't even remember when the direct market started. What was it, 90 or 80?
It was the early 80s.
I think it was like 85 or something like that.
That's when I first started going to comic shops was in 85.
Hey. I own a copy of Dazzler number one, and I'm pretty sure it came out in 87. Yeah, I just looked this up on Wikipedia as I'm editing this here, just to make sure as to when it came out. And actually, Dazzler number one hit stores in February of 1980. I was off, Toby was off, I was farther off than Toby, so apologies for that. It's February 1980. It went straight to the direct market and bypassed the newsstands and went straight to comic book shops. And now, back to the show.
I know, right? Somewhere around that time.
So that's one of those that keep your bet up, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's one of the ones I make sure just in case I ever need any extra support, that's always there. How much of a factor do you think the direct market played into, I guess, the independents being able to create their own universes? Because obviously before then, it was pretty difficult to find them anywhere. And once the direct market showed up, they had a place to be.
Well, you did have, you know, companies like Neil Adams had Continuity Comics around that time. So, you know, he was doing stuff with Megalith and a lot of
the Revengers and armor.
Armor and everything else that he was doing. So he was actually trying to build a superhero universe, you know, around that time. I can't think of any other companies other than Continuity around that time that were actually trying to break away, you know, from the big two.
Mm-hmm. It was all self-contained. The Turtles, Forrest, the Bear. I mean, just any black and white comic book was pretty much a standalone. Even all the Dark Horse stuff. They had Dark Horse Presents as an anthology, but even that, everything was all separate except for when they did the Aliens versus Predator. But
right.
Dark Horse didn't even try to bother doing any superhero. The first time they tried really doing anything superhero-wise, that's when they decided to make their own universe with the World's Greatest Comics.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is a couple of those titles, like Ghost and I think X, were about the only ones that really survived out of that.
Ghost definitely had legs, and I don't know how much of that was because of Adam Hughes covers or the Dave Dorman covers, but Ghost was the only one that really had any legs.
Well, it just even looking at what happened with CrossGen, where CrossGen had its universe for a while and then failed, was that more the fact that their business habits, or was it more the fact that people are – it's hard for people to follow more than, say, one or two universes in their own head without going crazy, thinking, oh, when did this happen? When did that happen? When did that happen? Because – there aren't that many others out there. When you give it a shot, it's hard to stay afloat amongst the big two when you're trying to create a big universe.
The thing that killed CrossGen was all business related. Mm-hmm. I mean, they honestly, you know, from what I had read from the CrossGen stuff, they had a really cohesive universe, and they managed to keep it going right up until the end.
Yeah.
You know, there's still people today that want to see those stories finished because, you know, they had the Negation War going on right up until the end, and they never managed to finish it off. It's like with Valiant, the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole reason that Valiant Comics, well, I guess Acclaim Comics, folded was all business related. You know, they couldn't afford to keep the titles going, and that's the biggest death of any universe. Look at Defiant. You know, another good example.
Okay.
Even Broadway Comics, which. The only real common thread there is they were all Jim Shooter.
Mm.
Right.
So, but the whole Valiant thing, he had been gone from Valiant after he got ousted for probably, what, David, maybe a good five years?
Between Valiant and Defiant?
Yeah, it's been a couple years.
It was definitely a couple of years, yeah. Then Acclaim really came in. And by that, I think when McLean started, though, the fire was pretty much just about done. So that really, yeah. I mean, it wasn't like that was competition, really. But getting back to Cross, I wasn't reading the CrossGen stuff, but I don't know if it was, and like Toby said, it was business, because the way the comics were made, you know, everybody lived in Florida. You worked at CrossGen. It's not like it is today where you have Mike Norton and Scotty Young living in Chicago, working for DC and Marvel, respectively, and sending their work in. If you worked for CrossGen, you lived in Florida. You reported to work every day.
Yeah.
And that brought back that bullpen feel like Marvel and like DC had back in the 60s and the 70s. It made for some really great comics. Like I said, I didn't read them, but everybody that I know that read CrossGen books loved them. I don't know anybody that read CrossGen and was like, yeah, you know, I stuck with it, but I couldn't get into it, or I don't know where it was going. Everybody that I hear read CrossGen loved it and recommends the books.
Well, Brent, so, you got a bunch of the trades, I know, after the fact.
I got a bunch of them last Christmas, and I read them all. All the I think they're Edge, the first 13, or like the only 13 that were released, the Edge trades. It's like the compendiums.
Yeah.
So yeah, I know I've mentioned it on the show before, and I really got into it. It's just sad that I can't find the Forge compendiums to kind of go to the other half of the universe. And it kind of stopped those trades as the universe was starting to converse and stuff. I think the guy from Sigil, the soldier guy, started to go into one of the other books in the compendium edition. It was kind of really exciting, mm-hmm. but then all that ended as I got done with them.
Yeah.
So it was kind of disappointing.
And at this point,
but I did like him a lot.
A lot of that material was just not available now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I went into one comic shop in Orlando, and they've got, I think, one Forge trade, but that's about it.
Back in back last year, Checker Books had gotten the rights to do trades of some of the CrossGen stuff, and they just recently managed to put a couple of those out. The main problem there is, you know, CrossGen filed for bankruptcy back in 2003, and then Disney snapped up the rights to all those properties. So any future trades have to be done through Disney.
Yeah.
You know, or Checker's got to make some sort of agreement with Disney to get the rights to reprint those properties. But I personally would love to see some of that stuff still back in trade. And I'm sure you can go to comic shows and still find, you know, most of the old stuff like Ruse, you know, Way of the Rat, Sigil, Sojourn, The Path, all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually kind of a shame about Disney. You know, I mean, Disney could have done a lot more with the licenses that they actually got, and they just sort of just sat there and stagnated for a while. Yeah.
Well, that might be because Disney's not really putting out any comics themselves now, right?
Well, they also pulled the plug on their Disney Adventures, the little digest sized book you'd see at the checkout stand at the grocery store. They pulled the plug on that.
Yeah.
And I mean they're like Scrooge McDuck stuff and any old Donald Duck stories are pretty much done by Gladstone. I don't think Disney themselves have any sort of comic book imprint or line.
Yeah, like Gargoyles. No. Gargoyles is being produced by a company other than Disney right now. It says based on the Disney cartoon,
right,
but it's not actually a Disney line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Slave Labor is doing that. They were also doing a Haunted Mansion, and I think they were supposed to be doing an Alice book, but that never materialized. There was an interview on Toon Zone with Greg Weisman, mm-hmm, who had said that you know, they had some stumbling blocks early on with trying to get the storylines approved, because basically what they were trying to do is pick up after the second season of Gargoyles,
yeah,
basically forgetting the third season ever happened. So
right,
they had some kind of growing room, and the books got delayed a little bit.
Yeah,
Tron 2.0 was the other title that they put out.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that hasn't seen print in a few months.
The Gargoyles comic is back on track now, and actually there's a second spin-off series about the villains that's going to be coming out, I believe either next month or the month after that, to fill in the gaps.
Yeah, issue 6 just hit stands this week, so.
Yeah. And actually it was very, very good. It actually brought them back to Avalon, so it was sort of a flashback to an Avalon story involving Coldstone. Anybody who was a huge fan of Gargoyles, if you haven't picked up the series yet, you got a lot to read. It's definitely great stuff.
It's something I was thinking about. You know, you were talking about universes. Star Wars has really become kind of a comic book universe now.
Oh, sure, yeah.
A lot of the – look at Dark Horse. Dark Horse has had the rights to Star Wars for almost 20 years – or almost like 15 years now. And they've seriously developed, you know, that property, but it even goes back farther than that if you want to look at the old Marvel series, you know, because a lot of the early characters, some of those have shown up in you know, the Dark Horse stuff.
So they do make references to the Marvel characters. That's just not something that Marvel kept along the way.
Well, Marvel didn't have the rights anymore.
Okay, good.
You know,
yeah,
once
yeah,
their rights lapsed, all the rights reverted back to Lucas.
Okay, good.
And then Dark Horse wound up reprinting the old series under a banner, under the Long Time Ago banner.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's a good thing to bring up here. You know, talking about Gargoyles, talking about Star Wars, how difficult is it to bring a long-standing television universe over into the comic book universe? I mean, would you rather see something that distances itself from the original source material? Would you rather see something that picks up, say, for instance, like Buffy, you know, in season 8? Or would you rather get the side characters you really didn't get before? David, what's your thoughts on that?
It would really depend on how it's presented. I mean, Star Wars is fantasy science fiction, so, I mean, that works. And Buffy, the way Buffy's written, it's pretty much, it's catered for the comic book audience. But I mean, if you wanted to put something out there like, you know, I really couldn't see a Law and Order comic book.
Right.
Or I mean, CSI seems to work. But again, I mean, some of those stories can, or some of the things that they do in those stories, they're not quite crossing that line where, you know, well, I can't believe that. That's like someone getting bitten by a radioactive spider. I mean, they still work for real. So some things don't work well in any other medium than the one they were intended for. But like the ones you mentioned, Star Wars, Buffy, Star Trek, those do work. And you just kind of also have to understand that in the Firefly comic book, you may not get somebody that looks just like Nathan Fillion, or you may not get William Shatner in a Star Trek comic book. Right. You might get someone that kind of looks like him, and you can run with it that way, or you can, or like Pete, when Peter David wrote the novels for, was it like New Voyages, or no, the beginning, the Starfleet Academy books. These are characters that were not the ones we were used to. You can kind of run with it that way. If you can come out with a Star Trek comic book about another Federation captain and his crew, and this way there's no, you're not looking at it where, okay, well, if this is supposed to be Captain Kirk, why doesn't he look like William Shatner?
Sure. Well, you have to have a bit of a suspension of belief when you're going from the TV to the art, because obviously you're never going to get a perfect likeness.
Right.
Well, you know, the like David said, the toughest thing that you're going to run into is going to be licensing. Because, you know, Lucas has been pretty laid. Well, they originally weren't, you know, when Marvel had the rights. Because I remember reading a story that Roy Thomas told, you know, back when they were first launching that book. Actually, no, wait. Conan actually is a good example also of, you know, a licensed property that's, you know, done well and built on its own universe. Simply for the fact, you know, you look at Conan, you look at Red Sonja. When I don't remember if it was Savage Sword or Conan the Barbarian first came out, you know, back in the 70s, they actually couldn't use a lot of things because they had to get clearance from the Robert E. Howard estate.
Right.
And the same thing goes with Star Wars. You know, when the first Star Wars comic came out, they couldn't do anything. They couldn't use Darth Vader. They couldn't use anybody. They couldn't use any of the main characters or change them in any way because Empire Strikes Back was just about to come out when the first comic came out. Mm-hmm. So they had to kind of step around, and that kind of, you know, created the whole expanded universe phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, Brent, actually, let me get this from you as we're almost wrapping up here on segment one. Would you rather see the side characters, or would you rather see continuation of a season? Is it just like a case-by-case basis for you?
I think it just depends on whatever the license is. I mean, how Buffy ended, maybe you'd want to see the continuation of a story. But I think if it ended satisfactorily, maybe we want to see side characters or stuff like that, or lost stories. So, yeah, case-by-case basis.
All right. Excellent. Well, okay. Go ahead, Toby. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna throw one more in there that I know we forgot to mention. That's Transformers.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
That is the perfect example of a license that's a universe that's grown beyond its license. And Hasbro has been, you know, more than lenient. You know, maybe not at first, but both, you know, Transformers and G.I. Joe, both being Hasbro properties, have grown more because of being licensed out as comics. And have grown beyond, you know, what they were originally intended to be. In fact, the comics are directly responsible for the toys, because Larry Hama helped design the character profiles for the toy lines.
Well, for G.I. Joe,
there's a for both. He had I think it was either him or Bob Harris. There's a back issue magazine which I'll send you guys a link to over on the Tomorrow's site. That you can purchase a digital version of, that actually covers a lot of these licensed comics.
Sweet.
This might be something, you know, maybe if you guys, if you want to do another specialty, and we can cover this in more detail.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I mean, to say the least, guys, don't be a stranger, because it's great to talk to you guys for the first time in a while. And whenever you want back on the show, you know who to get to. Definitely.
Well, it's been great being a part of the 50th episode celebration here.
No question. So. And it's great to get the band back together. Before we go, I definitely want to get you some plugs out to you guys. Toby, you're doing columns now?
Well, the only thing I've got going right now is my blog, which hasn't been updated in a little while. And that's over at cosmicrants.wordpress.com. Mm-hmm. But it'll be moving back over to Blogspot, because I like Blogspot better.
Excellent.
And
do you stop doing
that,
the Silver Bullet reviews?
Yeah, I stopped doing those probably a couple months back. I just needed a change of pace. And they're getting ready to relaunch as Comics Bulletin.
Oh, okay.
Because there's a whole legal thing going on there that I don't have all the information on, and I'm not really at liberty to discuss.
Okay.
But yeah, you guys can find me over on Facebook. I have a Emerald City Comic Con group over there that you guys are welcome to join. You guys should try to come out for it. Be in May of next year. They've got a huge lineup. Tony Bedard's going to be there. Hopefully Jeff Johns. They're trying to get him.
Oh, cool.
And a bunch of other people.
Excellent.
But yeah, I'm actually trying to do as much promotion for that convention as I possibly can. So for the fact that that's my home convention. It's like you, Ian, it's like you with New York Comic Con, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is bigger, better, and double the space, as always.
that's the same with Emerald City Comic Con. They actually are moving to the Washington State Trade and Convention Center. They had to move their date because, you know, bigger space needs more time to plan.
Right. David, so. you have Marvel Noise right now. I know you used to be on Bullpen Bulletins. You're doing your own thing now. Give us a quick little summary, about 30 seconds or so, of what we can expect on Marvel Noise.
That's pretty much it, man. I mean, it's me just rambling on about Marvel. What I enjoy about the universe, I go over what you can expect to find in the shop, what Marvel's releasing that Wednesday, a couple of reviews on what I may have read over the past week, touch up on any news, and that's just pretty much it, man. I'm just gushing over my favorite universe.
Excellent. Sweet. And that's all at comicbooknoise.com, right?
Comicbooknoise.com is for the you can find the updated episodes there. There's the Marvel Noise Forum under the Comic Book Noise Forum on the comicforums.com. Available, it's on its own feed in iTunes, so if you can just punch in Marvel Noise and get it directly, unless you are already subscribed to Comic Book Noise, it'll be included in that feed. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it. Yeah, you got nothing else to say on that. New episodes every Wednesday, so episode 5 went up today.
Excellent. And obviously his old stuff can be found at bullpenbulletinspodcast.com if you want to check out the old Bullpen Bulletin stuff. So, guys, once again, thank you tons for joining me here on episode 50. And like I said, don't be a stranger. Whenever you guys want on anything that looks interesting to you, if you want to suggest a topic, go ahead and do so, and we'll definitely have you guys on again.
Appreciate it.
All right, great.
Yeah.
Good luck, friend.
Yes, and here's to 50 more.
You're damn right. 50 more, definitely. So, all right, guys, take it easy, and onward we go to part two in about, hopefully, 5 seconds or so after this one. So take care, guys. I'll talk to you guys later.
Good night.
Bye.
All right, good night.
Bye.
All right, here we go. The marathon continues. We're here with part two, and let me introduce the guests on this call, starting off with the Raging Bullets guys. First off, you know him as Dr. Norge on the forums. He is Sean Whalen. What's up, Sean?
How's it going, eh? Dude, that was real slick of you, man.
Oh, I see how it goes.
Oh, shit. Hold on. If you're going to do that, do it right.
Hey. And we are also joined by Jim. Some people say whack, some people say pow, but I say... Sensei of the whatnot Seguin.
Outstanding.
Gotta love YouTube, buddy. Gotta love YouTube. How's it feel to be a YouTube star, Jim?
Dude, man, it feels pretty cool.
And we're also joined by Freddie Williams, straight from his home line, the brand new artist on Flash. How's it feel, Freddie?
It feels pretty good. Thanks for having me on the show, by the way.
Yeah, great having you on, man. And it's great having, I think episode 25 or something like that, the last time you three were on at the same time. But it's been a while, so I figured why not have the gang back together. But before we actually go into the whole universes thing, obviously I got to ask Freddie some questions about Flash because, well, what would life be without taking an opportunity by the horns here? So, first off, Freddie, probably the question you're being asked the most: how's it feel to be working with Mark Waid?
It's a very much a geek out moment. Like any time I get a script and something as mundane as him writing a note to me in the script where he says or writes my name, like, now Freddie blah blah blah, I'm like, oh, he knows my name. But Mark Waid has been, you know, one of my favorite writers, I don't know, for as long as I was paying attention to writers. So it's great. It's kind of what, to me, sealed the deal for me to move to The Flash, because I really wanted to. I was really happy on Robin, but once I found out that I had the chance to work with one of my all-time favorite writers, you know, I couldn't pass that up.
Definitely. And, I mean, you're leaving the reins in a good place with Chris Bautista. I'm sure he's going to do a great job on Robin, just like you're going to do a great job on Flash.
Yeah, and I like his work as well, so I agree with that sentiment.
Definitely. Okay, great. Well,
I can't believe that next week we're getting an issue of Robin and an issue of Flash by you. Is that correct?
Just a heads up that when Brent says next week we're going to get issues, that means the week we were recording the next week after that. So that is now 2 weeks in the past. Yeah, that's the thing about recording things. Sometimes that happens. However, his part two of the Ra's al Ghul storyline that just came out, you can find on the shelves. That just came out this past Wednesday. That is Peter Milligan's story, and it's part two of the Ra's al Ghul storyline running through the Bat Books. Back to the show again.
Next week.
Next Wednesday?
The 24th, I believe. Should be, let's see, issue 167 of Robin, and then 233. I'm getting my numbers all mixed up of the Flash. And then the following month, the same thing will happen. Like, my last issue of Robin will come out, my second issue of Flash. And then the following month, in January, I have a JSA Classified issue, number 34, coming out, and a Flash issue. And also, the only single cover that I ever did for Robin was 170, number 170, a book that I didn't draw, so it's ironic. I finally got to do a cover, and it'll be coming out in January along with two other, you know, single issues that I drew. So, the next couple of months I'll have a lot of work coming out.
Excellent.
That'll be the first time in a long time in recent history that any artist has ever put out two books in 1 week. I think that's going to astound a lot of people.
And it's part of that is, you know, I was ahead on Robin, and then, you know, was taken off of that to, I don't know, I was kind of put on several different titles to do either fill-ins or finally Flash to kind of get things caught up. So, you know, it's not like I was actually drawing, well, I don't know, maybe I did draw two issues in 1 month on one or two of them, but I don't normally keep up that pace, or else I'd, you know, kill myself.
Hey, well, you know, and you're talking about numbers earlier. It would just be a lot easier if you switched to the Raging Bullets style of numbering, you know. It's Flash issue 49 Z7Q, and then life would be so much easier, right, guys?
I mean, laugh it up, man. Laugh it up.
I had to. All right, let's not drill Freddy the entire time here. Let's get it back into the comic book universes. And I figure right before we got into this call, I told Brent, hey, Brent, why don't you take the reins? And he's like, what? Huh? Who? So hopefully he has some things to be asking the group here, and I'm just going to enjoy being able to sit back, relax, and sip my green tea for a while. So, Brent, the reins are yours.
All right, well, don't sit back too far, since we didn't ask you any questions last segment.
Damn right.
Ian, what was your first universe that you ever got exposed to?
Well, the first universe I ever got exposed to was Marvel Comics as well. That was really the first thing I started picking up regularly. So I guess the X-Men part of the universe was first, and then everything else followed. And from there, it took me a solid maybe 3 or 4 more years after that until we actually finally got into DC. So Marvel was my first universe, and I enjoyed every step of the way.
Okay, as a follow-up, is Marvel your favorite universe still, or has that changed?
You know, that's actually a toughie, because oddly enough, and I don't want to make these guys have a huge head or anything like that, but it's listening to Raging Bullets that's actually given me more of an appreciation for DC Comics. So I'm liking DC a lot more than I used to these days, and I it's pretty much up there. So I'd say it's pretty much an even 50-50 right now.
Jim, let's go with you next. What was the first universe you ever got exposed to?
With me, like, universes exposed to, I have only experience on two universes. You know, current DCU and the old X universe back in the 80s. I knew some of the other big stories going on in Marvel, but I really couldn't talk intelligently about them, especially now, given the length of time it's been since I've read anything, and I'll beat you all to the punch and say, can I really talk intelligently about things right now? Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, come on. Yeah, but yeah, it's the X-verses back then that I was big time into, and you know, it's what I was. I just wanted to read Wolvie and Uncanny, but I got all the X-Men, I got the Factor, I got Force, I got all the inner, you know, little limited series and whatnots from it, so I was heavy into the X universe.
Actually, I have a quick question for Jim. What exactly is a whatnot of the Marvel Universe?
You know, there was a period where I was doing some Cap, you know, some Avengers, I read a couple Fantastic Four here and there, the whatnot.
Okay, gotcha. Just wanted to make that clear for the listeners out there.
Hey, dude, you only gave us 40 minutes. We're trying to speed it up for you.
I know. Dude, we could have done 40 minutes.
Yeah, sometimes you
guys have 40 minutes. So we're saving you for last.
Right.
All right, Freddie, what about you? What was your first universe you got exposed to?
I guess it would probably be, because of the Super Friends cartoon, it would be Superman. And also, whenever I was a kid, seeing the Superman movie on, you know, on TV or VHS or whatever it was. So it would be DC, and I think that's probably what made the biggest impression on me, specifically Superman, obviously, because me and Jim and Sean were talking for a trillion hours about it. But I did pay attention as I grew up to mainly the art that Marvel had, specifically Jim Lee and Wilfred Hasio and the basically the Image guys. But it was DC to start it off.
And then is that your favorite universe now? Are you contractually obliged to say that it is?
Am I contractually obliged? I don't know. I don't know. I guess I have more of my favorite characters in the DC universe, so I guess that would be my favorite. But I have a real love for Marvel as well, so I guess so. I guess DC is.
I love DC. Cha-ching.
Yeah, it's not that I'm contractually obligated, it's that I get like an endorsement, or it's like an endorsement deal every time I mention them during a podcast, I get a raise or something. No,
oh, cool.
No, I'm joking. No, I actually do. I mean, just to all, you know, when I think of iconic characters, only one or two Marvel characters really pop out in my mind, but, you know, and that would be like Captain America and Spider-Man, I guess, like the iconic characters that are worldwide known. And whenever I think of, you know, on the DC side, though, there's, you know, almost the entire Justice League. So, and, you know, there's a lot more over on that side. And those are the guys who I grew up with, you know, knowing and loving. So I guess it would be DC.
All right, now for the most redundant question of the podcast. Sean, what was your first and favorite universe?
Well, it's not as simple as you think, actually. It was both DC and Marvel. And basically, like Freddie was saying, a lot of it was due to media. You know, first of all, the Adam West Batman show, and then the old Spider-Man cartoon. Those were the things that drew me in, and the original Super Friends with Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Because of that, I followed, like, Batman and Spider-Man were the two characters that really kind of drew me into comics. More Batman. Batman was, if I had to pick one of the two, it was more Batman. But, I mean, I read tons of universe. I've read DC, I've read Marvel, I read Valiant, I read Malibu. My favorite universe, I mean, that is redundant, obviously, it is DC. But I've liked a lot of universes. I mean, there's been and that's the variety of the universes is, to me, what's so great. If you read different comic universes, they're so drastically different because of what the authors are trying to do with it. That's kind of the excitement for me, of reading something different.
All right, last segment, we talked a little bit about whether you were more inclined to like a certain universe if you read that comic first. So anybody think that's true? Like, if you read your first Marvel comic, you're more inclined to like them. If you follow them more than DC, like, on the first go-around?
See, I'm proof that that's not necessarily true, because my first and major exposure was Marvel. You know, I was the X. You know, my older brother was Spider-Man, so I had this huge Marvel thing. And I actually, back in the 80s, and, you know, I read a couple of the different DC stuff, and I wasn't too into them, and now I am so gung-ho into the DCU that I think as you grow older, as you change what you're looking for and what you want and what you enjoy, at times you'll go back to, you know, nostalgia, so back when you were a kid and go, oh wow, that's cool, I remember when that was doing that. But who you are now is going to determine more what you like now.
I have to respectfully disagree. I think that what your experience is probably, I mean, it's not unheard of, and it's very, I mean, it's obvious. But I think that statistically speaking, if you were to look if you were just to have a poll of, or run a poll of all of the comic fans in existence or something, I think that even if it's by 51%, I think that there's a higher probability that there's the people who, whatever world they were exposed to first, probably made the biggest impact because, you know, and again, statistically speaking, they probably were exposed to that when they were a kid. They probably enjoyed the bright colors and the feeling of empowerment or the fantasy of the story or whatever. So that character will probably have some sort of special place in their heart or something like that as they get older. Now, they can break free from that, but I think that, you know, in general, it'll probably be what you're exposed to first.
I agree with that, but I don't think that that limits you to one set universe. Because, like, I get very nostalgic for Batman and things like that, but I remember the first X-Men comic I picked up. It was the story where Liana got pulled into Belasco's world, and I was so totally glued into them. I went back and got every Claremont issue prior to that, really just delved into that whole run. While I am, and I can totally agree with you on the fact that I am more of the Batman fan, I get nostalgic for the X-Men every so often for just that same reason, because that was my first Marvel book. So I don't think that it limits you to the universe, but I totally agree with what you're saying in the sense that I get nostalgic for that X-Men because I remember picking up that first comic. I get nostalgic for Batman. I think, are you guys trying to say, does that like push you towards one universe or just towards certain characters?
It can do a little bit of both sometimes. I mean, like for instance, for me, I was really into X-Men because that was the first thing I read, and then from there, it drove me to read other things in the Marvel Universe because I'm like, hey, such and such just guest starred in this. I've never read anything by him. I should probably go pick that up and see what he's really like.
Yeah, and going off of what Freddie's saying, I get nostalgic for big Justice League stories because my first team book was Justice League. So whenever they do like stuff where they're giving nods back to the satellite era, I get goosebumps at that kind of stuff just because it's, you know, that was my first team exposure, the satellite era, Justice League. And I get the same goosebump rush when I, you know, read certain X-Men stories because, you know, every so often I want to jump back and see what's going on with Wolverine, what's going on with Professor X, what's going on with Cyclops. So, I mean, those are, I don't know if it limits me to one universe per se. I'm definitely more a DC fan. That's more the universe where I want to explore some of the smaller characters and all that. But my nostalgia for certain characters, I don't think it sticks to one. And I think I would do the same thing. Like if Valiant started up again with brand new stories, there are characters from Valiant that I would get nostalgic for and jump to immediately. Archer and Armstrong being one of the first ones that I'm thinking of off the top of my head that I would jump to. So I think there are certain books that I think are your first exposure to something that you're always going to get nostalgic for.
Well, let's go with that that Valiant topic and talk about lesser-known universes. Does anybody remember the Image verse that they kind of had going at the early 90s where we had Spawn and Freedom Force and Youngblood? They were kind of crossing over every now and then. What was that like? Because I didn't read those comics.
Are you talking about like the original Spawn issues when they came out?
Yeah, like the
like
original
when they first made the jump?
Image crop. When they were all starting out and, you know, they weren't having the fights in between the creators and stuff.
I read the second
Spawn collection or something, and, like, Badrock was in there for a couple issues. I didn't quite know who he was, but now I know that he's part of Youngblood.
There was a lot of energy during that time. I remember I was reading X-Men during that time, and Jim Lee jumped ship. And that was the big one, when Jim Lee jumped ship, and then you start seeing, you know, Rob Liefeld go from X-Force, and just, you know, all of a sudden everybody started, and, you know, Todd McFarlane, you know, he's leaving Spider-Man and going over there. It's like, what is going on here? All the biggies are leaving. And I think there was so much enthusiasm with those guys and their books, and there was so much buzz that I think if you were reading comics during that time, you had to pick those books up, and they were beautiful. They really were really good-looking books. And, you know, especially the first initial issues, there was a lot of excitement to see what they were going to do. For me personally, the whole universe as a whole didn't stick, but there was some really good stuff coming out of what they were doing over there. And I was enjoying a lot of it. Wildcats I really enjoyed during the initial launch when that was coming out. And Spawn was, you know, because it had that supernatural slash kind of horror feel to it. And it was really a good-looking book.
The Imageverse was good while it was around, but my main issue with the Imageverse is that once it split up, a lot of the issues and a lot of the continuity suffered because of that, because there were characters that crossed over into books like Spawn and like Wildcats and stuff like that, that they then had to edit out and change the even the origins of characters. Like, for instance, Spawn's origin had to be changed when the Imageverse collapsed and split off, because one of the characters, I forget which one, but was from Rob Liefeld's Youngblood.
Chapel.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Chapel. Chapel was one of the main characters in it that was involved with Spawn's origin, and they had to change that when Liefeld left, because obviously that character belonged to him, not to Image Comics. So you get a bit tricky when you're doing something like that.
Yeah, they changed it to a character named Church or something like that, because basically Chapel from, I think that was his name, Chapel from Youngblood, who had the skull painted on his face, mm-hmm. was supposed to be a mercenary that, before he became a part of Youngblood,
right.
was sent to assassinate whatever his name, Simon something. It's been a long time since I read it, but, and yeah, you're exactly right. And a similar thing happened with, I mean, it was, a lot of it was with the falling out with Rob Liefeld, really, because, mm-hmm. you know, when his Youngblood was in the first miniseries of Wildcats, they helped to stop, like, who was it, Dan Quayle or somebody, who was, like, alien Damonite, who was secretly trying to take over the government and all this stuff. But anyway, I mean, for me, it was, I mean, that was really when, basically, I had been a fan of comic book ideas or properties or characters since I was a kid, but it wasn't until 1990s-ish that I started having the cash to start buying comics, and then in 92 or 93 was when Image was started up, so, you know, it was right there in front of everyone's face, but for me it was like, you know, they had an equal say in a way as Marvel and DC, other than that DC had, you know, older characters that I could relate with, or, you know, like Superman or something, but, you know, there was a lot of excitement about it. And even, I remember, like, even as I was reading the stories, looking at, you know, the artwork and watching the videos that Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee and Will Kratosky all put out on, you know, where Stan Lee was interviewing them, called the Comic Book Greats, that whole series. It was like, it had saturated my brain and a couple of my friends who were in my clique that were paying attention to that sort of thing. And it was as if it was going to be around forever. When it all kind of fell apart, you know, kind of depressing.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the Dan Quayle thing, because now him misspelling potato makes a hell of a lot more sense.
He was being chased by superheroes.
No. He was secretly a Damonite. So that's why he misspelled potato, because he didn't know any better.
Exactly.
All that Spawn stuff is news to me, because I'm rereading the Spawn. I've read through issue 55 through the year. They're a big collection things, like 20 issues. I just bought the fourth one today, so we'll see where that goes. But I think those are a great way to reread them. But it's too bad that none of the other stuff has really been collected like Spawn has. I know Savage Dragon is starting to do the like the essential type format in black and white, but I don't think Wildcats has done anything like that, or Youngblood.
Well, they're supposed to do an absolute Wildcats, and I don't know what happened with that. That was, like, solicited when they were doing the Wild, you know, when they did the Worldstorm relaunch, that Absolute Wildcats was coming, and then we haven't seen anything. I'm wondering if maybe because of the delays of Wildcats, they decided to put that on hold for now. But that was one of the Absolutes that was supposed to come out, and I was going to grab that because that initial run of Wildcats was great.
Well, I think there is a good run of Wildcats that Alan Moore wrote that's in trade now that got released over the summer. Right?
I picked that up. It's a complete trade.
In the Spawn reprints that you're reading, or collections or whatever, does it still have his original origin, or did they, like, paint out and replace the original character, like Chapel or whoever it was that assassinated him? Did they replace that with some guy that Todd McFarlane owns?
Oh, no, everybody's in there. Chapel was in there in, like, an issue in the first collection. The first collection's, like, 1 through 12 minus issue 9 and 8. Because those are the issues where he crossed over with Cerebus. And then the other one is Angela, which is the one that I think Neil Gaiman wrote, but McFarlane doesn't have the rights to that character anymore. So they just left that out. But I finished reading the third collection, and they still mention Angela all the time. Like, nobody's business, but that particular issue's not in the collection for some reason.
And due to the whole Miracle Man thing, they're really never, ever going to, you know, pretty much resolved. That's the type of thing. And again, don't even get me started on Man of Miracles. That whole thing where he had McFarlane had the issue with Spawn done, and then at the last second just changed his name to Man of Miracles, and you never saw that character look like Miracle Man ever again. That he was quote unquote a shape changer, and that's the reason why he just took on that form. Ugh.
To answer Freddie's question, Chapel is in these issues. It's a direct reprint, but they just did not reprint that one issue that Neil Gaiman wrote.
That's
so his origin hasn't been changed yet, as I'm reading.
That's too bad the Angela stuff isn't in there, because the Angela miniseries actually that spun out of that was really well done as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing about these collections. They don't have that miniseries or like the Violator miniseries collected in them, but they do reference like stuff that goes on in there, so I'll have to go back and pick those up. But it's really like I'm having a great time reading this series. I don't know why. I guess it just got bashed because it was 90s Image associated with Liefeld, but it's really a great read, I think, so far.
Hey, I have something to throw out there to the crowd, specifically with DC, since I guess is the best time to ask it. Was it more or less difficult to follow things when all of the universes were separate in their own little worlds, like the Fawcett characters and the characters that came over, like Blue Beetle and that sort of stuff? Did you like it better when they had their own little like spot in the universe, or was it better off for you guys when it came to them joining into DC and Crisis on Infinite Earths? And Jim, I guess this is a good thing to ask you, since I know you're reading some of the older stories now. Is it harder to follow with like sort of two backstories to follow?
Actually, yes and no. For me, I like the fact I do really like how the current DCU feels like a giant universe, and with the different Earths and the different, you know, feels to each of the different Earths. I kind of like that feeling to it. Some of like the trades I've read where they say Earth such and such, and then like that. Then if that was in regular current continuity reading, like the regular monthly reading, that would probably throw me off. I would get probably confused by that.
I got to be honest, having read that as a kid, because Did anybody else read that stuff, like, before Crisis? Did anybody read pre-Crisis DC?
Nope.
Like, when it was out?
I wasn't born.
Me neither.
Okay. I was reading the pre-Crisis DC when that was out. And I gotta be honest with you, it sounds like it's such a, like, complicated thing to follow. I wasn't reading every DC book at that time. I was a kid. I had no budget. I was reading Justice League. And that actually was probably a book that they did the JSA crossovers every so often, and you knew that the JSA was from Earth 2. But every so often you get characters like the Freedom Fighters who would be in an issue, or there'd be reference to, like, Seven Soldiers or somebody like that. And you just knew that these characters were from different worlds. And I remember, I don't know if it was in a collection or if it, because they had giant size issues that they used to release back then. They had Superman and Shazam, and you knew that they were from like different worlds. It just didn't, it was the story you were following. Like, you knew that, okay, Shazam's from one world, Superman's from another world. It was, but you were following the battle between the two and the storytelling that was going on there. It wasn't really throughout the story a big part of the story that they were from different worlds, where you had to know the continuity of what was going on. Like, for example, when you were saying the Fawcett universe, you didn't need to know, like, hey, what's the Fawcett universe all about? You just knew that they came from a different world. So it was kind of a, I don't want to say generic because it kind of, you know, makes it sound bad, but I mean, it was just kind of, it really was a very simplistic, like, these are just people from another world. And maybe the heroes would wind up on that world, but there wasn't a whole lot of, like, today we're exploring more in depth what actually goes on in those worlds. Like, when you're doing the search for Ray Palmer and you see them in the Wildstorm universe, you get to see, you know, their reaction to that. And they didn't do that back then. So it wasn't as confusing as it sounds, because they didn't do the kind of explorations that they're doing today, at least in my experience with it. And I mean, I got to see a lot of different Earths. I read stuff like Brave and the Bold and, you know, Showcase Presents and stuff like that, where they, you know, would have characters crossing over every so often. A lot of the stuff that's in the Crisis on Multiple Earths trades, I read that stuff when it was coming out. And I don't know if they didn't go as in-depth on the worlds, but it really wasn't as confusing at the time. And I was a kid. So I don't know if I'm smart. I don't know if I'm smarter now or less intelligent now. But
we'll leave that up to the beholder.
Yeah. And I probably get a different answer from day to day. But
as a reader who, you know, is reading post-Crisis, it's hard for me to read pre-Crisis sometimes, because I'm so used to the way it is now that I'm sure that if I was reading pre-crisis when it was happening, it would be a lot easier for me. But because I grew up with the universe one way, going back and rereading some of that old stuff, it's hard for me to sort of split the two in my head. It's like, okay, this sort of happened, but not really anymore. You know, this is in continuity, but out of continuity. It's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. If you're a like hardcore comic fan that's so used to continuity, and you got to think only part of this is really true now.
I think I hit the nail on the head on what I'm trying to say here. At that time, storytelling is very different today than it was back then. And that's no insult to either era. It's just that it is. I mean, you see different narration balloons and all that from back, you know, in those issues when you're reading them. It's a different way of writing and a different approach to storytelling. Every comic you were reading back then was like that. So you were, like, entrenched in that. You had nothing to compare it to, so it was just enjoyable. I really enjoyed those issues at that time. When I read them now, I can definitely see what Jim was saying, where there's a definite different feel, and what you guys are saying, you know, how it just feels kind of different. Because I'm going back and reading stuff in Crisis on Multiple Earths, some things that I did read, some things that I did not, and there's definitely a different tone and a different way that the stories feel now than they did when I was a kid. But at the time, there was nothing confusing, nothing bothered me. They certainly told you everything you needed to know in those narration balloons. They kind of spoon-fed you as you were going through the issues. So it was, I guess that's just what all it was. It's a very different era. And because that's what the stories were like at the time, you were so used to it. Like we're used to the storytelling today.
Hey, let me throw out a question to everybody. If after the final crisis coming up, things go back to the way they were pre-crisis, would you rather see that or see things stay how they are?
I'd first like to you know, kind of touch on the question that was just asked about, was it confusing back then? Or for me, I just read individual story arcs usually, and I would get a self-contained story within one or two issues. And just like what Sean was just saying, the editor usually made a lot of notes at the bottom of the panel, like with an asterisk that said what was going on if somebody hadn't been reading the other continuity stuff. So for me, it wasn't that confusing, but I wasn't trying to read and understand the entire continuity of the DC universe at the same time, you know. And I would prefer, just as a creator, that it go to a multi-universe, multi-Earth, you know, omniverse again, because I have stories. I mean, this is just a selfish reason, but I have stories that I want to tell about Superman and other DC characters that would not or will not fit into the regular continuity of the characters, but I still feel like they're good stories. And with there being alternate universe or being able to put it on a different Earth or just whatever, or if it goes to different Earths, I think that there will be editors looking for those kind of off-the-wall character, you know, ideas for those different Earths. And so that's what I hope it goes to.
You know what, I'm just touching on what you're saying, because it's interesting to me to hear your creator talk about this. With the fact that Dio's mentioned that each of these Earths that are out there now have, like, multiple realities and dimensions and things like that within them. So it does sound like it's kind of what they've got right now is a very open slate to kind of play around. Because when they talk about the Legion now, we've got three Legions, and they're supposedly all three of them are from our Earth in some different timeline or dimensions. So that means that any of these 52 Earths that are out there have those same possibilities. Do you feel as a creator then that gives you options to, you know, say that these characters are from this Earth and this is where my story is from? Or would you rather have it where you don't need to have it that clearly defined? You can just tell that story.
I think the second option of what you just said, basically, I mean, like, even though this isn't a decree at DC, I mean, like, you know, Joe Quesada at Marvel was talking about or has said that he just wants to tell a good story. So, you know, sometimes that means paying less attention to continuity or something, but as long as it's not too far gone, but ultimately it's about telling a really good story. And for the purpose of a specific story, you know, I would love to be able to kill off major characters. When I say me, I mean if I was involved in the co-plotting, which I'd love to be, but I would love to be able to kill off major characters or supporting cast to create more of a dire situation in the context of that story and not have to go through 700 layers of editorial approval to get that sort of freedom, you know. It's like when reading Kingdom Come, I mean, not that anything I would write would come close to that. But I'm just saying that there's what feels like when you're reading that, I mean, now they're kind of making it part of like the regular continuity, but at the time it was meant to be kind of like an Elseworld story, I guess, you know, something that's like an alternate future, or at the very least really far into the future. So Alex Ross and Mark Waid were able to do a lot of stuff with killing people off or making dramatic changes to the characters, and it was okay. And in the context of that story, it made it feel like that was a big deal. Those characters dying or being wounded or whatever meant a lot, even though it didn't affect the rest of the continuity. And those are the kind of story, I don't know, it's like continuity can be a double-edged sword, and for a creator, I think usually it's the bad edge of the sword, at least whenever you've got radical ideas of what you want to do. I mean, I would love to have, you know, tell a story where Batman dies and Robin and Nightwing have a conflict of who would take over as the Batman, and then one of them or both of them went out, and maybe you have two Batmans that dress the same and coordinate their efforts. That way it's no longer necessary to, you know, you could actually be seen in the same place, you know, both Batman and Nightwing, or Batman and Tim Drake or whoever. But, you know, that sort of thing probably would never happen in the context of the DC Universe, because everyone and their mother knows that Bruce Wayne has to be Batman. It would be nice to have that kind of creative freedom. Sorry to ramble there, but...
No, that's where Elseworlds worked. I mean, that's one of the things where I'm hoping out of my personal opinion, out of this whole thing, I like what they're doing right now with the Earths and the fact that there are the options within continuity to tell multiverse stories again, where you can do that, and the way that they've kind of defined some of these Earths so people have kind of a roadmap. I'd like to see at the end of this, because we haven't seen Elseworld stories for ages. There was kind of like a ban on Elseworld stories, it feels like. Then they reveal that there's a multiverse and some of the Elseworld stuff is now in continuity. Well, it actually looks like almost all the Elseworld stuff is in continuity. But I would like to see, hopefully, when all this is said and done, that there are those options again for creators to do an Elseworlds kind of thing with the characters. Because I always loved Elseworlds, because that was where you got to see Bruce Wayne don a Green Lantern ring. And, I mean, just because of luck. And you got to see a bad Superman. And you got just all these things. And we got to see Superman from Russia. And just great stories that you can tell and, you know, kind of play around with everything that we all know. I'd like to see that back again out of it.
It would certainly be an interesting dynamic. Again, coming from a guy who's so used to the way things are now, if they were to make the change and make it, you know, make it gel right, then I'd be okay with that. Because I've always been a fan of Elseworlds and parallel universes and stuff. Like, the Exiles in Marvel Comics has always been one of my favorite things. I'm loving what Booster Gold's doing now with the whole, you know, going through time and being able to have his own adventures, that sort of stuff. If they have a dynamic like that going on, I'll be a happy camper. Just make it seem right. Don't force it in. That's the only thing I'll ask for.
Well, that's where I'd like to see Elseworlds as a separate entity still being an option.
Right.
Where you don't have to force it in. So if you've got good storytelling where you can have Booster in continuity jumping there, like you're saying, and we can have those fun stories, keep that option available. But then by the same token, to address what Freddie's saying, you don't have to feel like you're caged. If you've got a great Batman story that you want to tell that just won't fit into any form of continuity and shouldn't fit in any form of continuity, you should be able to do both. I guess as a fan, I want to be able to pick up. I like the variety in my reading. I'm loving what they're doing right now. I'd like to see that option come back again. I thought that was more of what like the All-Star line was going to be, where we were going to get some option for stories that weren't limited in that. So I get, and I'm not saying that I want them to get rid of the All-Star line. I'd rather see, though, let's bring back Elseworlds as an actual line again, the way that it used to be. And that's regardless of how they handle the actual DC Universe. I'd like to see that come back again, just to open up the option again for creators.
All right, well, we're hitting around that 40-minute mark, so let's close out with, let's tell everybody what the best thing you think going on in your favorite universe, like its best factor. What makes you the most attracted to it? You know, your favorite thing about it. Jim, let's start with you.
I gotta say, with the DCU, I like how it is a universe feel to it. You have interconnected stories, crossover between titles, but it's not just like associated people. Like, you'll see Batman and Robin together. We're seeing just other heroes that you wouldn't think would be connected running into each other and dealing with each other. It kind of makes sense to me that you have all these heroes out there that they're eventually going to have some type of interactions with each other. I like that. I like a universal concept of all titles and anything can happen. You know, it's to have just all these separate individual titles where they don't interact, it doesn't seem realistic. It doesn't seem normal for me. So that's the thing I'm really digging about DC, that we're seeing all this stuff.
Freddie, what about you?
That's really funny, because I don't really have a real good answer for that. I guess, I don't know, what I like about the DC universe, or, you know, any universe really, is kind of some of the same stuff that I dislike. There's a lot of crossover, which is, there's a certain comfort level to reading these characters that I've known my entire life, feeling like I know them, and in a way, like, being happy that they're doing well, but then, you know, I also want to see things shook up and permanent change being delivered to those characters. And there is some of that stuff going on in the DC universe, but I guess I would like I would like to be a part of it, so maybe that's my biggest gripe with it. So anyway, I'm not really sure how to answer that, so I guess I'll say ditto to what Jim said. I'll just copy his answer and then paste it.
All right, Ian, what about you?
I think that and I'll answer for Marvel, since everybody else is doing DC. What I like about Marvel is that a lot more these days, it feels like the events matter. Specifically with what happened with Civil War, as opposed to what happened with House of M, where when we got out of House of M, things sort of just seemed to try to ignore the fact that there were only 198 mutants left as much as possible. What we're getting out of Civil War is the fact that everything didn't go back to normal the day after Civil War ended. We still have two sides battling it out. We still have Iron Man as, you know, the leader of S.H.I.E.L.D. We still have all these interesting plot points going on that usually just get swept under the rug after a big event happened. I'd say the consistency, that it feels like things matter in the Marvel U. More like what's happening in DC with what happened with 52 and Infinite Crisis. Things matter a lot more in Marvel than they used to.
I'm going
to
echo you there. I love that Marvel is... You know, everything matters now. I'm loving that Tony Stark is the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., not just in his own book, but in all the books. You know, he's featured prominently in Captain America now as the director of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think, what's the other book? The Order, I think, is doing a great job of setting up the post-Civil War Marvel Universe. And Avengers Initiative is probably one of their better books out there right now, besides Captain America. So I'm just loving the way everything's going right now.
Agreed, yeah.
Sean?
For me, and I guess this kind of applies to all the universes that I've read. I mean, you know, obviously it's more to DC right now, but it really does apply across the board, the human element. To me, in a universe, when you see characters reacting to devastation, when you see characters reacting to relationships, when you see characters reacting to the death of a character, something like that, in a book where it didn't happen, you know, it's just something, even if you didn't read the actual event, you didn't read the character dying, but you see your character that you're following and that they have an emotional reaction to it, it gives them a human feel. It rounds them off. You know, how many times have you gotten that phone call where you hear about something that happened to somebody, or you see something on television where it happens and you react to it? And when you see characters doing that, even if it's something like a small little tiny detail that creators put in where it's in the background, it's something that's going on the television that ties the universe together, and you see somebody's quick reaction to it, it makes the world feel more real, because there are more than just what's going on in that one book that's happening. And that's the kind of stuff that I like. It doesn't have to be a heavy focus. It can be just a little tiny quick thing, just a little detail to remind you that, hey, there's other things happening in this world. And those are the things I kind of geek out over, because I want to believe these are real people. It's the kid in me that's like probably never going to go away. Ask my wife. But it is the thing that keeps me coming back to comics. And I don't mean it to simplify comics. It's, you know, why do we watch television programs over and over again? Because we get attached to characters and we want to follow their story. It's the same thing with these people. We want to believe they're real. And that is what I like about a universe, because it does give that human element to them.
Amen.
Hey, it's still real to me, man. It's still real to me.
And I think that's the best place we can possibly end. It's still real to Jim, and you know what? That's kind of what matters.
Don't encourage him. I got to record with him tomorrow night.
All right,
as long as Jim doesn't wake up in a straitjacket or anything and at its cell walls. That's all that matters.
Oh, jeez.
It's all real to him.
Uh-huh.
It's all real. Uh-huh. All real.
All right. Well, let's give a plug, obviously, to RagingBullets.com. And give us a quick rundown, quick as in like 30 seconds or less, what's upcoming on Raging Bullets, Sean.
Oh, geez, we're re-recording lots of stuff. We just did a countdown episode. We just did an episode with our speeding bullets for September, our top bullets, I should say, for September, which was great. I really had a great time talking about that. And we got coming up JLA 11 and 12. We're going to be talking about the end of the Meltzer run, which we had. That's the redo that we're doing with creator Art Lyon, who is the colorist on the great issue JLA number 11. So we're going to have a good time on that one.
Excellent. Well, definitely, thank you guys for joining us. And Freddie, thanks for taking some time out of your busy schedule to join us here, man. And can't wait to see the issues when they come out.
Yeah, read The Flash and read Robin.
Definitely.
Freddie, well, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay.
It's been so long since the last one.
Oh, dude, yeah, well, definitely. And, you know, whenever you want to come on again, well, I'll certainly be in touch because I'd love to have you on again to just maybe do a rundown of a complete issue or something like that somewhere down the road. Okay, great. And let's just end this one more time with our favorite sound. Okay, thank you very much, guys. Sean, Jim, Freddie, guys, it's awesome. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. And this is the end of part two, part one here, part two upcoming next. So we'll talk to you guys later.
And congratulations, guys. Seriously, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm glad to see that we're catching up to you guys in numbers.
We're going to overtake him soon.
You're going to surpass us, yeah.
Yeah, you'll pass us, dude, but, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All right, guys, take it easy. Have a good night.
Take it easy, man. Okay. Bye.
Bye, guys.
So there you go, people. That is part one of episode 50. Upcoming is part two and possibly part three after that, considering that I believe the fourth call goes about an hour and a half to 2 hours, so I might have to turn that into two separate episodes, but we'll see once I'm actually doing the editing for that. So at least one more part to go on episode 50, possibly another part after that. Before I go here, actually, here is the promo for Marvel Noise.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Deliberate Noise Network is proud to present a brand new comic book podcast featuring David A. Price. That's right, I said David A. Price. How cool is that? I realize that you're probably used to hearing David as part of the Bullpen Bulletins podcast, but we hope that you'll like hearing the same high-quality podcasting at the new home. Check out www.comicbooknoise.com/Marvel Noise for more details. Or send email to david@comicbooknoise.com to say hello. Thanks, and keep watching the feed for the first episode of the new Marvel Noise.
So before we wrap this up here, I'm actually going to be putting on an extra 50 minutes on this episode. It's up to you whether you want to listen to it or not. This is actually from the summer when Brent Raff and myself were just shooting the breeze and I happened to record it. It's actually pretty funny. I mean, we don't really talk comics that much, but we do go everywhere else. So if you want to listen to it, you can go ahead. If not, then once the credits are done rolling, you can go ahead and turn off the episode. That's completely up to you. So yes, enjoy, and part two will be coming next week. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forum over at thecomicforums.com/forums, graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. We're also proud members of the League of Comic Book Podcasters over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes, graciously appreciated, and please dig us on dig.com. So thanks once again to everybody who was on this episode so far, and thanks everybody who's on it in part two. We got some audio comments in part two as well. So as always, there's always time for comics.
Yeah, it has been a while.
A long while. Yes, it has.
Yeah. It's exactly. What was the last episode that I was on?
Because
I know
three.
I.
What's Look that? At that. He knows right off the bat.
Uh-huh. See,
he knows when we all started dropping like flies.
I come prepared, buddy. I come prepared. I actually went through my archives to make sure when everybody was on last, like right before I started this thing, so.
God damn.
Are we going to get a genesis of Comic Time?
I have no idea what preparation's like, so.
Hey, man, I'm sure you got to do some for Marvel Noise.
Yeah, well, some is a very broad term.
Yeah. I
so we're gonna go old school Comic Timing style, no prep.
You're damn right.
Nice.
It's how it's been since then. So I figure why not keep up the old style? Because as Brent knows, looking ahead is not really something we're good at.
Excellent.
Your pants is more fun, anyways.
Can we just call him to tell him that Ian's in the bathroom?
He said to let you guys know what's going on, so that's what I'm doing.
Hi, guys, I'm back. Brent, I'm going to turn the universe stuff, the universe questions over to you, but first we're going to have a little Q&A with Brent.
What do you mean, turn it over to me?
Meaning you get to be host for this segment. I love springing things on you, buddy. What can
I wasn't
say?
Paying attention last time. I was letting them talk.
Yes, I know. And
you bastard.
Hence why you get to ask questions this time. You know, actually, you know, ask questions about it. But anyway, let's just get into it, all right? And actually, one more comment about anything, Sean. After you left on episode 300, I got my Hero Clicks, and inside was a shiny new Hawkman. You should be proud of it.
You know what? This is a moment where I can't even get into the Hawkman moment because the two of them sound like deranged demons. What is that?
Oh, boy. That's called Skype being Skype, buddy. That's called Skype being Skype.
You
guys started like hours ago, right? Like, how long has it already been?
We started at 9 o'clock. So we just finished our second segment with Freddie, Sean, and Jim. And before that, it was David, Toby, Brent, and myself.
Thanks, you know, cool. holding Sean and Jim to a half-hour segment is near impossibility. So congrats on that.
Well, I saved Sean for last, so he had plenty of time to think and get his answer down. Restaurant you guys ate at after Mocha? Assuming you mean you guys went to?
Yeah.
Because they bitch about it for like an entire episode.
Okay, all right. Now, Rap, explain to Brent why we had nothing to bitch about.
You sat with the Asian?
Because we had two Asians at the table. Because there was me and there was Ian's friend.
Jenny.
Jenny, there you go.
Yeah.
And so two Asians is better than no Asian. Yeah, we had the advantage. Actually, no. We had something to bitch about. We were the last table to get to order.
Yeah.
And yet,
we were the first table to get their food.
Yes.
Backwards racism bullshit right there.
No, because you know why? Because I was smart enough to order in my own language.
Yeah, English. Right. Oh, wait. Well, yeah. No, that doesn't work.
So I ordered Chinese, and she's like, oh, okay. And then next thing you know, we're like one of the first ones to get food, and I'm like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah. You get your food.
They're like, you know. Let's show up the white people. Let's just give the Asian.
Table 5, ordering Chinese. Get shit out.
That's actually not that far from the truth. Actually, no. I asked them about Demon's Order. They were like, they just kind of shrugged me off. I was like, what?
Oh, yeah.
You have skinny white man with goatee and fat bald white man. Fuck them.
We too scared of him to serve him.
Yeah, that's how far
people behind. Like him put us in internment camps, World War II. Fuck them.
I'm so glad.
That man imprisoned my grandfather.
I'm so glad I'm recording this.
Oh my God. I'm so far behind. I'm on episode 266 right now. So,
dude,
I'm like a week and a half.
I have 22 podcasts to listen to.
I don't go in order.
10 of those are like. 10 of those are Earth2.net panels that probably won't ever listen to.
Since it's summer. I haven't really listened to Earth2 that much. I mean, they seem like they're cool. It's just that there's only so many hours in a day, you know?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I only occasionally listen to them. They put out a 7-hour, their episode 100 is a 7-hour podcast. And you know what it's about?
What?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies.
They
review all of them.
Oh my god.
Yes. It's like,
what the hell
did
they do?
Damn,
DVD
man.
Commentary?
It's 7 hours and 15 minutes.
Stealing from CGS, basically. I was going to do a DVD commentary with Jamal and Freddy. I don't know about I still don't know if I'm going to do that 100%, but
you're going to do it.
Yeah, I'm probably going to do it.
You're going to do it because there is no shame in podcasting.
Exactly. I stole Stump the Rios. What the fuck?
Well,
nobody say anything. So
why? I have no idea what you're talking about. Roundtable discussion about comics.
Exactly. Fucking. I have no original shit on my show. I don't care.
Oh, well,
I don't even
that's
care.
That's why. Okay, you know what? Actually, I have to play the very end of the episode that I just finished editing to you right now, okay? You're going to absolutely fucking love this. I hope you remember saying this, Brent, because this was like the best thing that you've ever fucking said. All right?
Whatever I said, I still love you.
Oh shit! It's gonna be one of those, huh?
Okay. Well, hold on.
Fucking rap.
Before we get into the
podcast,
hold on. Let me get to it first. I think it's around here. So, all right. I'm gonna put it on stereo, so you're not gonna be able to really hear me that well. But all right.
Oh shucks.
Oh fuck you.
Why do I get an image of somebody walking around with one of those bags they always put on a horse's ass in Central Park or what have you?
Oh, I know. The Geeks Unite podcast. That's the fans of Comic Timing right there.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
And Equinox.
And you can find us at geeksunite.libsyn.com. Yeah, that's right. In and around comics. Let's not start that again.
See, that's why I put that whole third generation podcast shit on my website. I'm covering all my. It's like I don't have to be original. I just got inspired by these guys. Fuck you.
See, this is why.
You're just a derivative.
This is why Brent has to learn not to say things.
This is why I'm never gonna start a podcast. I'll be fourth generation.
Oh, by the way, dude, when are we recording our We Hate the Flash?
Maybe next week.
Okay. All right, maybe
you guys
Tuesday?
Want to do it? I finally read everything, by the way, so I'm off okay. date. I haven't read anything from this week.
Because
so.
he wants to do a, his segment thingy.
Where you're going to bitch about The Flash, or...
Yeah,
it's time for Leonard Storm and a Beat Cage! Bullies!
Yeah, I think I'm going to reread Flash 1 through 13 by
Tuesday.
Oh, the
Tuesday. Whole series. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I can have points to bring up.
Yeah. Oh, and just definitely make sure to listen to the bloopers in episode 40.
Yeah. I'm.
That's all I'm saying. All right. Because seriously, it's the first time I've ever had a full 45 seconds worth of stuff that I just had to put at the end.
Oh, 45 seconds? You had more bloopers than that on that episode.
No.
A
I mean,
pure
a full
45
segment.
Second.
There was a pure 45 second segment that
Holy
just went straight
shit.
To the back.
Oh my god. I'm a little.
Was that...
No. No, it wasn't that. It was the penance stuff. Because we go all the way over the place with that shit, man.
Oh, yeah. I remember now. Not.
Yeah, okay, fine. Should I be playing that right now?
It's been a fucking month, man. Come on.
It's not been Before we get into the episode, it has not been a month, man, all right? You're totally exaggerating.
Bullshit.
It has been 2 weeks, fucker.
No. Okay, it is now Thursday.
Yes.
Last Thursday, we did Fantastic Four.
Yes.
The week before that, we did nothing. The week before that, we did Nova.
Oh, okay, so it's been 3 weeks. Ha-ha.
3 weeks.
3 weeks, ha-ha. Not a month. Booyah.
Close to.
Well, it's not like you promised it would come out at certain times.
It feels like a month.
Dude, I'm so ahead of my podcasts right now. It feels really, really weird.
You're proud of yourself?
Yeah.
Are you proud of yourself?
Yeah.
Well, you should be.
Okay, fine. Okay. Fun. Like, I'll be talking all here in the background. On Wizard Magazine that he played for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes. And more than welcome, buddy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me around.
No problemo. And Brent, you're welcome as always. Mr. Co-host, not co-host, co-host.
No co-host, but a co-host, but not a co-host. What are you saying?
You're a co-host, but you're not a co-host, but you're a co-host. you're pretty much named a co-host at this point if you show up. But great having you on as always, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, cool. Man, as always, there's always time for comics. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, here they come.
I thought I was, you know, an expert at the ball massaging, but, you know, apparently I can still learn.
I am very much, much missing out on an inside joke here, so fill me in.
No, in one of his PMs, like last week when he said he couldn't do it, he said he can't go or his wife would have his balls in a sling.
Oh.
And I said, that expression's really fucking cool.
Well, that just reminds you about something, okay? Whatever you do, keep the slings away from the wife at all costs.
There you go.
This is a superhero called Nova. You know, he just went through a major part of his life, and you know now he's dealing with it and friends and shit.
Hello?
So, yeah. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Fuck, sorry. I just got this thing on the bottom of Skype that said, Skype cannot hear you talking. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's going to do that whenever, like, you don't talk for, like, 8 seconds. So.
Oh, sorry. I hope I didn't ruin that.
No, don't worry about it. I'm just going to say that part again anyway, just so we can get it. Because I think halfway through I heard a shit. I'm like, uh-oh.
Well, because I was reading it and then I... Sorry.
Don't worry. It's okay.
Every breathing and sniffling will keep it active.
Exactly. So just wheeze every now and then. So it'll be fun. Like I'll be talking all here in the background. Do you feel that the world mind might have ulterior motives? Ulterior motives. Wow. Do you feel that the world mind is trying to connect to Richard Rider's DSL while he's not around?
So they're not evil, they're just misunderstood.
Exactly.
Just like penance.
It hurts so good.
Poor bastard.
I love feeling spikes through my balls.
He's got his balls in a sling.
Are you dense? Are you retarded? I'm the goddamn penance.
Do you think for punishment he has like an iPod in his head and it plays like whatever his least favorite music is?
Barbara Streisand on loop.
There you go.
And I did it my way.
Some smooth old soul or something. Like smooth jazz elevator music.
That would just put him to sleep. I mean, that wouldn't really, you know, cause him that much pain. I think what he has to listen to is...
What about like Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera?
Nothing but Britney Spears and Old Dirty Bastard.
Oh. I mean, just lost a listener there.
Yes.
Not many, but some others.
All right. Well, okay, fine. If anything, then, just the cover that ODB did with Macy Gray of that Elton John song, that was terrible.
Okay, yeah. He probably has Macy Gray on loop.
There you go. All right, fine. I wonder if this is going to go back in the back of the episode, because, I mean, this is just absolutely nothing to do with anything at this point. I don't even remember what the hell my name is anymore. Oh, yeah.
Trevor.
Oh, I forgot about Trevor.
I hated that episode, but I still remember it.
Whatever you say, Trevor. All right.
That is the longest clip I've ever heard.
Yes.
Seriously. Oh my god! You guys just keep going on with it. It's so it goes from penance to balls in a sling. Back to balls in the sling, which was before.
Yeah.
All the way to Batman.
Yeah.
And then over to You've Forgotten What Your Name Is, and then back to Trevor.
And then the
it's
last
goes back to Trevor.
And then the last thing I say in the episode. Let's see if I can.
Ha 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 ha! En français, oui oui oui.
Wow, I don't know where the hell my head is today. Yeah, and
41 is gonna be so much better.
Oh yeah, dude. Because like I said, I don't even know if I'm gonna just gonna. I think I might just skip the music entirely. All right, or just play it through once and then just have it keep going.
Yeah,
you could, and then kick it in at the end.
Yeah, I know.
Just so you have That you know
how sick I am of my own music already?
I like it.
I like my own. I still
I love it. I want some more of it.
Now see, that's that I'm sick of. Give me a pizza.
Butt frosting. I seriously don't know where that came from.
Dude, butt frosting. I'm on the train, okay? I'm on the train heading home, all right? I just got back from my grandparents' house, all right? Oh, all right, because I needed to get a chiropractic adjustment. My grandfather is a former chiropractor, so he still gives us an adjustment. So I'm on my way home. I'm on the R train connecting over to the B. All right, and Brent's like, why do your trains have letters? I'm from Florida.
You know, in Washington, D.C., it's all colors. It's
yeah.
Color-coded.
Same thing.
Forbid you're colorblind in that fucking
city. Same thing in Boston, also. They have the red line and the orange line and the green line.
Yeah, but we have colors. We have colors and letters, though, because we have so many fucking colors. You have to tell the difference.
Do you have magenta and red versus purple?
I think we do.
Wait, no.
Aquamarine?
No.
Turquoise?
Wait.
Forest green?
Thank you. We have forest green.
Fuchsia?
We have light green.
Do we have fuchsia?
Yellow green.
No, I think they retired yellow green.
Okay.
What about puce? Do you have a puce line?
I have no fucking.
Is that the Z? Is that the X train? Puce line.
We have no X.
I'm, by the way, just to let you know, Raph really is shitting out his mouth right now because that's totally not the case at all. Okay. All right. Right now, we have like orange trains. We have yellow trains. We have green trains and blue trains, and that's really it. And silver trains, that's it.
No, we have purple. We have purple.
Wait, we have purple?
Seven.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I forgot about the seven train.
Seven, the red for the one.
I forget about the seven train because that's the Mets train.
Yeah, well, whatever. It counts.
Yeah. But anyway, let's go back to me cracking up hysterically on the train, all right? So there I am, all right, sitting there in the corner seat, minding my own business. I'm on the train for two stops, literally, all right? Because I take it from Court Street back to DeKalb, all right? So there I am.
Can you walk?
At, like, Lawrence Street. I could if I wanted to, but it's also easy to take the transfer. So.
It's also hot as hell out
there. It was ridiculously humid and hot as hell today, so I just took the train over.
Oh, it's humid in New York, Florida. Bitch. Want some cheese with your wine?
Me, Timmy.
Yeah. Why the fuck are we recording? Let's just call this an episode. Let's just save ourselves some work and call this a fucking episode.
Just post it. Bonus.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Dude, that's actually what I might do. I might do one of those like Easter egg things like Around Comics does sometimes. But anyway, yeah, so there I am, all right? Minding my own business, okay? I'm trying to get through the end of X-Men number 200. So I'm on that last story there. So I'm trying to read while listening to you guys, all right? And all of a sudden I hear butt frosting.
Just laugh out loud.
I start cracking up, all right? The comic book almost launches out of my hands in my fit of laughter. Luckily, I stopped myself. And I'm thinking to myself the entire way home, butt frosting? The fuck is butt frosting?
It was. Oh, jeez. Let me listen to it. Let me listen to this shit and let me see what the fuck. Because I don't remember. I remember saying butt frosting, but I have no reference to it.
Oh, I forget whether or not it was in one or two, honestly, because it was either one of them. Because I was listening to both of them. So
it's like, probably no. You know what? It's the bloopers of part one.
You think it was the bloopers?
Yeah, I don't think I would have left it in because it has no context.
I think it might have actually been during your conversation about Nightwing.
Hold on a second. I'm gonna listen. I'm gonna listen to the. I don't. Yeah, you guys can't hear it on your end, right?
No, we can't.
All right, I'm gonna listen to the bloopers on.
The only way we'd be able to hear it is if you set it to stereo mix.
Oh, you know what it was. You know what it was.
What?
I think it was Juan who just professed his love for Nightwing.
Uh-huh.
He's like, I love Dick Grayson. And I'm like, yeah, you love Dick. You love Dick with butt frosting. Some shit like that.
Yes. I think that might have been it.
Yeah, I think that it's a blooper. It's a blooper. I definitely cut that out. That's a great line though. You love Dick with butt frosting.
Dick with butt frosting. Dude. All right. I want you to cut a promo for Comic Timing. All right? All right.
You love Ian with butt frosting.
Then you want Comic Timing.
You're listening to Comic Timing. High and butt frosting. Fun for the whole family.
Fun for the whole anus.
Ooh. You know what my favorite planet is? Uranus.
Okay.
I live in Sub Diego. Oh, jeez. Yeah, so next week I'm at Anime Next, Friday to Sunday. And after that, my convention tour begins, all right? In a matter of 4 weeks, I'll be at 3 conventions.
San Diego, Anime Next, and what's the other one?
Otakon.
Otakon, all right.
Of course.
That's a curb job.
Oh, really? Sir? How so? Huh? Explain yourself, Foo.
What's the curb job?
Oh, wait, the curb job? What do you mean?
Hello?
Hi, how are you? Brent?
Going to call.
Hello? Can you hear me?
How's this?
Seriously. Just like, don't even fucking edit it. Put it out as soon as we're done.
I'm blowing out the listeners' eardrums.
You know,
did you take your headphones out yet?
Okay. You know, everybody's going to think we were fucking high when we did this.
Let them.
Oh, man. But
is it 2 o'clock yet? No!
what do you mean by curb job, anyway?
No, in CGS, whatever, Brian Deemer goes, if you don't buy from In-Stock Trades, I'll come over there and give you a curb job.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I went, that sounds nasty, but I don't know what it is.
You see, a curb job is a series of tubes.
God damn it. Raph, what the fuck? Help me out, brother.
Raph? Are you there?
Oh, well, we didn't need him anyway.
Raph.
Fans of Comic Timing, the Geeks Unite podcast.
Raph, wake up. Wake up. Your computer is not dead, Raph. Please, for the sake of the children. Come on back, man. Come on. Don't leave me alone with Brent. He scares me. Come on. Raph, please. It's dark in here. It's dark in here, and I don't know where I am. Please. God.
Someone turn out the light.
I'm going to go run in the corner. Dude, if you're... Okay, cough twice if you're still there. Okay, good. I heard you.
That's once.
I heard the cough. Say hello if you're still there. All I heard was the cough. What the fuck, man?
Oh, there we go. No, never mind.
That was hilarious, okay. Though, because I'm like, cough twice if you're still there. That's all I heard.
The light, just, you know, the mute, I have a mute light on my headset. It just went on, and it locked in for, like, however long that was.
Yeah, but that was great, though. It unmuted for the cough.
Yeah, no, it unmuted, but the light was still on, so I was like, am I, you know, it just went off. So that was fun.
Thank you for saving me. I was so frightened. Brent's scary.
So yeah, no. A curb job is when Brian Deemer takes you to the curb, beats you down to the floor, and makes you order from In-Stock Trades a few times.
Okay. That makes me feel a lot better.
Beat down? Can you say beat down? Why do you have to confuse us?
Because curb job makes colorful. More sense.
He wanted to be colorful. It's Brian Deemer.
Curb job sounds like a sex job or a sexual act.
Maybe that's what he's going to do. Deemer. I don't know. I mean, you don't know.
A sex on a curb that... It's gonna hurt.
Snakes on a plane. What's your point?
This is Brian Deemer we're talking about. Brian Deemer is the only man Batman can't plan for. The last person that yanked Brian's chain, Jimmy Hoffa, and Brian was like 2 years old. Speculator boom ended not because of oversaturation, but because Deemer uttered 3 words: "No more speculators." When Deemer is sleeping in private, his goatee slips off to run a crime organization that spans 4 continents and 32 countries.
That one's great.
Brian Deemer knows what's beyond the source wall because he had it for breakfast. Warning, pregnant women, the elderly, and children should avoid prolonged exposure to Brian Deemer. Caution, Brian Deemer may suddenly accelerate to dangerous speeds. Brian Deemer contains a liquid core, which, if exposed due to rupture, should not be touched, inhaled, or looked at. Do not use Brian Deemer on concrete.
Oh my god, it's Happy Fun Ball. It's Happy yeah. Fun Ball. I haven't yeah, thought of that seriously. In years, man.
A lot of people just like freaking they either copied the Happy Fun Ball or they took from the Chuck Norris facts. I'm the only one that came up with like comic related Brian Deemerisms.
Hey, well, I still like
oh, yeah,
mine
you too.
Though.
You had yeah. the movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you stopped at 23.
Yeah. When Jack when Jack Bauer saw Brian Deemer walking down the hallway, he stopped at 23.
Oh god!
Right, Brent.
Oh, we lost Brent.
What the fuck?
Come on,
it's
Brent.
Like one or the other here. You know, Cassina. If you're there, cough twice.
Cough and hold your ball.
Oh, there we go. Okay, all right, all right. Are you dying?
I was doing as instructed. Cough and hold your balls.
Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brent Cassina.
Frank Cassina, proving to everyone that some people actually do cough and hold their balls. What's your favorite Deemerism, Cassina?
You know, since I haven't been on the forum in a whole day, I can't say so.
You haven't been on the forum? And you call yourself a nerd?
After I started talking to you, and I just went on the forum and got your message from last night about not recording today.
That's great.
No, it's it only started like I don't know this afternoon I think. So you're not missing much. I already copy and pasted the best of it onto its own thread.
Yeah.
It's called The Legend of Brian Deemer. Too much for one thread to hold.
Yeah. What'd you cook your girlfriend by the way?
Something easy. Tortellini.
Oh okay. That's cool.
Yeah,
see, I thought you actually cooked her something easy. I'm like, whoa, is that some sort of like product that I haven't heard of before? Is that like the new Rice-A-Roni?
You mean something hard?
Yes.
I cooked her something hard already.
Oh, that's what she said. Woo!
Whoa.
Like pork tenderloin with some pineapple salsa before. She really liked that.
Wow, that sounds tasty. I just finished watching Kitchen Confidential.
Of course, that's something Ian, I will never cook for you because, well, can't have it.
Mm-hmm.
It's pork.
Yep. Wait, what the fuck, man? This is one of my kosher.
Haven't we been over this?
This is one of my kosher.
Huh?
We've been through this. I'm not kosher.
Oh. Right, you're a bad boy.
I am a bad boy. I just had bacon for lunch. Oh. I had myself a lovely salad with Cajun chicken, tofu, egg, bacon, carrots, and tomatoes
that
with French
good.
Dressing.
You know, if you just convert, you don't have to worry about that kosher bullshit.
Well, I don't have to worry about it because not all Jews are kosher.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, if you know, it's not like with like Catholics. Catholics have to be automatically guilty for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, look, I don't want to have to start believing in some dude named Jesus. I just thought he was a dude, all right? You know, other people think he's the man. I just thought he was a dude.
Or you could be a Jew for Jesus.
That is the stupidest
I know.
Concept.
I look at them. I'm like, what are you doing?
It's like, I'm a Jew for Jesus. I'm like, how does that work? I mean, which testament, I mean, like, which parts of the Bible do you read and not read?
Both of them. It's like, yeah, but you, all right, whatever. Whatever.
I'm a Jew for Jesus. That means I'm a self-hating Christian.
Yes, there you are.
Oh, man. Seriously, I mean, what the fuck is? Are people really gonna pay? I mean, anybody who's like not like a rich ass bastard gonna pay $499 for a fucking phone?
Yeah, fuck that shit.
It's ridiculous. That is the going price, right? $499.
Not including the plan or whatever. It's a 2-year plan.
And
it's
AT&T, man.
Yeah.
It's fucking AT&T.
You're gonna love the data plan. Guess how much the data plan is?
How much?
To use the internet, $60.
Well, fuck that.
60, it's more than the freaking Verizon Sprint stuff. So
you can use Wi-Fi still, though.
Yeah, it's true. But actually, it uses the Safari browser. So the reviewers say it's the best browser on all the phones right now.
Yeah, but meanwhile, how about the Safari browser
sucks.
That came out for the fucking Windows?
Yeah,
You saw that, like, on the first day, they had, like, 8 bugs.
Yeah, good job, guys.
Yeah. And I love it. Like, one guy posted on Dig, I never had a blue screen of death until I installed Safari.
Oh, wow. That's nuts.
Yeah.
He never had a blue... I've had, like, so many blue screens of death. It's not even funny.
With XP?
Not in a while.
Okay. All right.
No, I'm just talking about in general.
All right.
Because, you know, yeah. Blue screen of death is nothing new for a computer user.
I've had maybe, like, 6 blue screens of death since I got my XP.
I had it when it was, when it first came out.
Okay.
Was it Office 2001?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that one. The really crappy one.
Yeah.
And then I upgraded to Home, Service Pack 2, blah, blah, blah.
I had Office 2001, until my mom bought her laptop, and then I took her Office 2003 and said, mine!
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's so much better.
Office 2001 sucked balls.
Brent?
If you bought the student and teacher edition, you can install it on 4 different computers.
That's exactly what I did, actually.
It's not really mine. I'm borrowing this.
Well, I just kind of took it from her, and now it's in my room.
She's still a bitch.
Well, it's not like she needs
Whoa. What you who you calling a bitch? Damn, son, we're going to have a breakdown. Raph, eventually, do you want me to record? I mean, not today, obviously, but I mean, do you want me to record, like for you, the whole Heroes thingy?
Yeah, probably in like a week or two.
Okay, all right. Because
I just had to figure out everything.
Because my recording will come out better than yours anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I hate this fucking piece of shit.
It sounds better on my end, even though you're the guy who's like hosting.
Yeah, that's the sad part.
you know what I could do one of these days? I could just like go in the other room. You guys could just like have your show. I'm not even gonna be a part of it. And I'll just come on back. And when you're done, I'll press stop.
Why would I want to do that?
No, actually, I'm gonna get a bare bones kit, and I'm just gonna install the hard drives and the CD, DVD drives in there.
Uh-huh.
And then that'll take care of everything.
That would be fun.
And then I can get a real microphone and like record for real with a real microphone.
Yeah. Well, again, like I said, with the iRiver, you need an actual microphone.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a USB one.
Well, so. Also with Audition, you need to too. That's why I still use Audacity. I use Audacity to record the stuff that's like, oh, by the way, guys, blah blah blah. I record all the stuff I say that's post production. I put it into Audition, then I put it together.
Oh, one thing I realized about Audition, and I think it might just be the one version that I actually gave everybody. It turns back on the graphics for minimizing and maximizing.
Does it?
Yeah. Because I have it turned off on my computer because I realize it's a waste of space, basically. You know that zoom in, zoom out that happens on Windows when you minimize and maximize unless you have it unclicked?
Whoa, that's like so important about.
Yeah. Well, it takes up resources. That's why I get rid of it. But it's just so weird because it's the only program I have that turns it back on when it closes out.
That's weird.
Yeah, every single time I have to turn it back off.
Well, I have it on, so it doesn't bother me.
Oh, okay. What? Hey, Brett. Yeah. You call me a whiny bitch?
No, I didn't call you nothing, bitch.
There you are, call me a bitch.
No, I didn't call you nothing, bitch.
there was again with the bitch.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, you little bitch.
All right, that's it. I'm going home.
You're home.
Oh, fuck.
You're leaving our internet meeting room?
I'm leaving the interwebs because
you're getting out of your red lounge chair.
It's a scary place. I wish I had a red lounge
Charles
chair.
Charles Xavier X-Men meeting projection in the internet.
True me, my X-Men. Today, I will teach you that I no longer am in a wheelchair. That's all. Go away. I have my powers back, so I can see you saying fuck you in your mind, Wolverine.
And you say it a lot.
I don't appreciate that. Nope. Stop picturing Jean naked. She's dead.
Stop picturing her dead and naked.
Naked dead Jean Grey, is that what you said?
Naked dead Jean Grey.
Fucking perv.
Jeez, man.
You ought to be shot.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself, you damn necrophile.
You ought to be ashamed.
Well, no. If you're thinking about naked women and you tell someone they're dead, where are their heads going to go?
The tombstone, you perv.
Why are we still discussing this?
I don't know.
Oh, God. So, yeah, let's take a vote. How many more years until Juan gets a girl?
I'd say about 4 or 5 eons.
Whoa.
How long's
whoa.
An eon?
My name is Ian.
Wait, I don't think that's been defined.
My name is Ian. It's a common misconception. All right? Thank you.
Four or five eons.
That's better.
What's that?
If you put 4 or 5 eons together, you get a really whiny bitch, so it'd probably be a girl. Zing!
Geek Speak Report, yeah!
Seriously, just put it up as that.
Oh, man. Yeah, but seriously, 5 years.
I said 5 million years.
All right, yeah, so, yeah. Cause, yeah. But seriously, though, Wrath...
5 years and 100 pounds?
If
no, 100 pounds?
Oh, dude, speaking of pounds, did you see how much weight Michael Moore gained?
I thought he lost weight.
Holy shit.
I haven't seen him in a long time, so...
When he was on The Daily Show, all right?
I didn't see him on The Daily Show.
I haven't watched The Daily Show in months.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I'm... Get home, I eat, I go to the gym, I come
Holy
back,
shit,
I download
back.
Your stupid fucking podcast.
Whoa.
I post on your stupid fucking forum. And by that time, it's fucking 12:30, and I missed
Holy
it.
Holy shit, he's
yes,
fat.
But did
so
you,
which would
did,
you like me to do?
Did you know,
post
Mr.
Post on your
Cassina.
Stupid fucking forum, and listen to your stupid fucking podcast, and talk on your stupid fucking podcast, and make your podcast better because you don't sound so boring, and you can make fun of me? Or do you want me to watch The Daily Show?
See, it's a good thing that I know he's not. It's a good thing that I know he's not being serious right now, because if he was being serious, I'd be very hurt and sad right now.
It would have been on, bitch.
I'd be crying. I'd be. Nobody likes me.
I'm at work then.
When I am.
Oh, I'm asleep then.
No, you're not.
Yeah, then I gotta leave now and go fucking watch it, man.
Fine, man. Jeez, I'm DVRing that shit.
I don't want to leave.
No, he really got fat.
I have no place to go.
Nobody's home. I'm all alone.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, whoa, where the fuck is everybody?
Everybody is at orientation for Eric, for my brother.
Oh, okay. Orientation for what?
College.
Oh. Okay.
Wait, do you live in a city or a town?
What?
Brent, do you live in a city or a town?
Currently or during the school year?
Oh, okay. Oh, no, right now.
Right now, I'm in Orlando.
Oh, okay, never mind. Because if you're living in like some small town, like the fucking mass serial killer is going to kill you right now because you're home alone.
No. Right now, I live in Orlando. During the school year, I live in Gainesville, which is a town.
Yeah, that's what I think. Because, yeah. All right, never mind. No, you're safe. No, wait. College towns always get fucked over, too.
We had a serial killer there. About 10 years ago.
No, yeah, you know, it just put him to death last year. Slasher, undead, unstoppable.
Wrath, stop watching too many Yule Bowl pictures.
Because then I could juggle my tits for you.
What the fuck, man? Holy shit! What the fuck was that? Wow. Oh my god. You know, the words that come out of this fucker's mouth sometimes.
Sorry, I don't listen to that podcast. I say whatever I want.
You know, I'm going to make sure that if Denise ever meets you, she's going to fucking slap you. Just for that statement.
And
someone took the Brian Deamer thing kind of far.
Yeah, I know. I mean, my God, that Brent Cassina. It's like 1 minute he's like all here, and the next minute he's all there, and we're wondering what's going on. I mean,
yeah, I'll read you beer nutters. Brian Deamer's tears can cure cancer. Alas, Brian Deamer never cries. That one's the Chuck Norris one. The ghost from Ring called Brian Deamer and said he had 7 days to live. His reply, boo. The ghost died again. That one's okay. Brian Deamer really killed Steve Irwin. the Crocodile Hunter. That's a little too far.
Ooh.
Brian Dean was originally cast as John McClane in Die Hard, but the execs decided that a three-second movie was not going to sell. Come back up there. Brian Dean was in the original Predator movie, but he sidekicked the Predator and it died. They had to edit him out and make a movie with the leftovers. That's okay. The original moon landing was thanks to Brian Dean. He sidekicked the rocket to the moon. That's fine.
Oh, nice.
Because Jack Bauer is a man with only 24 hours to shit himself and cry like a bitch.
Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do.
Fucking love that ring. I need that fucking ring, man. Isn't it great that when Palpatine had that on the Robot Chicken thing?
I totally missed
that. Oh, you missed that? You see it, Brent?
Get it.
That Star Wars Robot Chicken special?
I walked in when Palpatine was on the phone.
Oh, okay.
But I saw the rest of it.
You've been riding around for 2 weeks trying to get signal? What? What's some... Wait, no, I forget. What was it? Damn it. I can't remember the full line. It's not the Millennium Falcon. Oh, well, whatever. Yeah, I think at this point, we've been recording for 46 minutes. And probably out of those 46 minutes, I can probably use about 20.
I think you're going to see two.
Or that. Well, this is good because I can use this as bloopers for anything.
Yeah, but how often do you not have bloopers?
On really good episodes.
When did that happen?
Whenever David D and John Mayo are up. Or whenever the topic is about religion and we're being serious.
Or whenever Brent and I are not on.
Oh, come on, let's be serious. It's whenever Brent is on. Hi, Brent. What up? What up, my homie? Official? I like pork. I eat pork. And no, I don't mean that as a euphemism. I love to shove pork down my throat. And I think I am going to introduce you on the show from now on as the co-host, not co-host, co-host.
Great.
Well, it's a nickname. It's better than being Brent. Look at him, he's from Florida Casino.
Or Juan by Crossing the Casino. I swear I'm gonna do it.
It's the same shit. I mean, come on. Think of how this entire country is obsessed with fucking Paris. Are you serious? You know?
Oh, Jesus. I'm so sick of that shit.
Did you hear about that one woman who actually, the one anchor who refused to do a Paris Hilton story at him on CNBC?
Something like that.
Excuse me, MSNBC. MSNBC. Yeah, there you go, MSNBC.
I don't know the exact details.
She actually took the story and shredded it on the air.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She absolutely refused to read it because her producers insisted on doing that as the lead story. So first she took a lighter and threatened to light it on fire. And then she just, you know, skipped it. But then the next time that it came up, she took it and absolutely shredded it. It was fucking awesome. It was fucking awesome because finally you realize there's still at least one journalist left in this fucking country, you know?
Best. Real ones, too.